women are sort of just expected to become mothers on the side. I feel like society values literally everything else except for health. We can't make changes if we don't acknowledge what is currently happening. Like, our society is not set up for women to become mothers. Welcome back to Healthy as a Mother. I'm your co-host, Dr. Leah Gordon, and this is the show for becoming and being a mother, where Dr. Morgan and I share the natural women's health and motherhood guidance you've been looking for through a fresh, functional, and balanced lens. Today's episode is very spicy. We are talking about a somewhat controversial topic, a philosophical, larger concept about how society and our systems in large are not really set up to support women who want to be mothers. We dive into the educational system, how as kids, women are not ever told that motherhood is something they can be when they grow up, how our obsession with college prep and sports and other things sort of takes away, or we don't prioritize motherhood. And so women are set up without support and they have issues getting pregnant. Our medical system is not set up to support that. Our pregnancy, birth, and postpartum, going back to work, none of it is supportive. And we kind of dive into the root causes of that and then what we would love to see change. And what might already be changing based on new things, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, as society kind of reshapes in this post-AI and post-COVID world. And it's just a really good episode. So I'm so excited. I'd love to hear what you think about it. All opinions are welcome. You can comment, you know, below if you're watching on YouTube, or just message us on Instagram and tell us what you think. And I hope you enjoy. Okay. Hello, everybody. We're back and we're going to talk about a topic today that's been on Leah's heart for a long time. And we have some caveats and disclaimers to put out in the beginning. So can you go ahead and just sort of lead us through why you wanted to talk about this?
Yeah. So this episode is about how our culture and the systems at large are sort of failing women who want to be mothers. And I'm feeling really spicy today. It was a weird night of sleep and stuff. And so it might come out more spicy than I intend to. But I just want to have a caveat initially, is that what we talk about in this episode isn't everybody's experience. I recognize that. It's coming from my perspective and then, you know, Morgan's perspective as well. But it's gaps that I have identified throughout my own journey and what I see with patients. And I feel like this isn't just a let's dump and share all the things that are wrong and let's have a boohoo moment or a poor me moment or anything like that. It's more, we can't change what we're not acknowledging. Like, we can't make changes if we don't acknowledge what is currently happening. And again, this is just one person's experience. I'm sure different people with different socioeconomic backgrounds, different backgrounds in all stretches of the imagination would have a completely radically different experience, even worse in some cases than what we're talking about. And so I can't speak to all of those experiences. I have not lived those. I'm just going to share from my perspective. And so you might be like, no, you're completely wrong. I had a wonderful, empowering situation where everything in my life was completely paved for me to become a mother and there were no struggles or challenges. And that's amazing. And that might not be your experience. Or you might have even more of the extreme where it's like, you don't even know what it's like to, you know, to grow up in a marginalized community or whatever. Like, I can't speak to every person's experience, so I will be speaking from my own, but I feel like it is important that we have these conversations to highlight what is the current situation of how our culture is failing us and why we're in the place that we're at, so that we can make changes for the next generation, for our children, for their children's children, because, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and again and expecting different results. And I just think that we need to have a more integrative, holistic, an intelligent conversation about how women become mothers.
I cannot wait. I have no idea what we're going to talk about, and I'm so excited. This is great.
All right. Well, I guess we'll get started.
I've seen you talk about this before, and there was like a trendy reel a little while ago that was like, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? And it pops up all these different things. And for little girls, sometimes it's like you want to be a mom. And I feel you and I knew that for sure. We also had career aspirations because of the culture that we grew up in at that time that was like, you can do anything. You shouldn't have to rely on somebody. You need to make your own money and blah, blah, blah. And I do value a lot of pieces of that concept. But there is a flip side to it too. So
yeah,
let's get into that.
Yeah, basically, this is such a delicate conversation because I talk a lot about feminism and everyone gets really like up in arms about feminism because I'm not anti-feminism by any stretch, because we wouldn't be where we are as women, you and I, being doctors, running companies, without the feministic movement. It was amazing. It gave women so much. Just like every trend and every shift in society, there are pendulums and they can swing very strong and extreme, you know, until it comes back to the middle. And I can hold, like we've mentioned on this podcast, both and with lots of things, right? I loved the feministic movement for so many reasons. And I think there were parts of it that kind of set women up on like the extreme pendulum swing now in not a good way. So let me just break that down for you. Basically, for a long time, women in our society were very marginalized and they couldn't do anything except have children, right? They couldn't work outside the home. If you can't work and provide for yourself, you can't live without a male partner or a person to protect you and feed you and all of that. And so you were sort of trapped in a way, and women didn't understand their reproduction. They didn't know how to prevent, and or they weren't allowed to. And so they just had more and more babies, and that was really hard, right? That was when the birth control movement started at the beginning of the 1900s, of trying to give women freedom, because first you have to control reproduction, otherwise you could just wind up pregnant anytime you have sex, right? That's what was happening in a lot of society, and I understand that, and that was really important. So I'm not like anti that movement at all. And then, you know, women started to get a taste of freedom and they're just like, I don't want to be a mom at all. You know, I have that choice and that's wonderful. And some women don't want to be mothers. And that's amazing that you have that choice, because feminism gave us choice. And then like the 70s, the feministic movement around the 70s, because there's lots of waves of feminism, the 70s and 80s-ish was sort of that, I'm going to be a CEO. I'm going to run my company. I'm going to work outside the homes. That's even when kitchens became smaller. If you look at the architecture of homes that were built in the 70s, the kitchen was not a major focus because women were just not at home cooking and homesteading and doing all of these things like they were before. They all wanted to work outside of the home, you know, and then we get into the 90s with a lot of latchkey kids and both parents working full time and the children are being raised in a very different way than they were before. And, you know, women were doing things that they'd never done before, and it was amazing. And look at all these amazing things that women were doing. And the feministic movement of the 90s was very female power, woman power. Women can do anything. I can do anything you can do. I can do it better. Like, all of that. And that was awesome, because I do think women can do anything, you know, men can do to some extreme. Obviously, if there's, like, a physical, you know, like, maybe a woman can't lift as heavy as a man or whatever. But in so many ways, women can do what men can do. But then now, I feel like we're in a new era where all of these women, you know, they saw their mothers go through that. They lived it through the 90s and maybe the early 2000s. And now they're waking up to the idea that they want to be a mom, because either it's inherently in them, because it is inherently in a lot of us to become mothers and to create, you know, offspring. I mean, it's biologically built into us. It's emotionally built into us. And so it's not in everybody, but for the women who it is, they're sort of waking up out of this fog. I mean, that's kind of how it felt like for me. I always wanted to be a mother, but then I had to do the things that society wanted me to do, which was go to school, get a good job, get a good career, you know, do all of these things. And then it's like, oh, and you want to be a mom? Like, boop, boop, that's just like a side little thing. Like, go do it, you know, go do it as like a side thing to this career and this training you've been doing for your whole life. And then all of a sudden it's not working.
Can like, I say something controversial right now?
Yeah.
I haven't really ever completed this thought, so I'm talking out in real time. But I actually think, as an anthropologist, evolutionary biologist by training, I actually do think that every woman has the inherent instinctual drive to become a mother. Mm-hmm. And so for the women who are like, I don't want kids, there's some other thing that has occurred. But that biological drive is there. There's something else that's happened where they're like, maybe there's been a bad experience. They have a different goal in mind for their family that's not compatible with children. They don't feel like they have the resources, whatever it is. Sometimes too, it's like people will not want children because they're with the wrong partner. Mm-hmm. And then they find somebody, you know, there's a big breakup. It's devastating, life-changing, whatever. And then they become into like this safe setting. And this biological, it's, we forget that we're animals. Like we are animals, and the biological purpose of life is to reproduce. I'm not saying that everybody has to, and I know you're saying this too, but like, just in case people are going to get up on arms about it, it's like, I'm not saying everybody has to have tons of kids or kids in general, but we have to recognize what we are, which is a superior animal species. Totally. We're definitely different. And still, yeah, we have a monthly cycle. Every single month, our body is trying to get pregnant. Every month, we have this selfless expression of an egg from our ovary that's like, please, come on. And the mental, emotional that and the choice that we make may differ, but there is this inherent thing. And like you said, it's an afterthought nowadays, and it's so wild. And I remember being in medical school with you, and we're like in our late 20s going through that. And there was lots of people who were in their mid to late 30s who already either had families or were in the midst of it. I mean, so many babies were born during our medical school, including my with myself. Like I had Gage during our medical school program, which I do not suggest to anybody. But it's like, well, what else do you want us to do? How do you want us to start this process? That's the age. Like, how do women get into these doctoral, like any kind of beyond undergrad education, and also build families in those years when those are your family building years? It's such a like sad thing that they happen at the same time.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I like, the crux of it all. So I had done a video on Instagram because I read my daughter this book at night. She loves it. It's called What? Oh my God. I don't remember the title. Something along the lines of like, what can she be or something like that. It's about all the different things from A to Z that a woman can be, you know? And so they go through the alphabet of A is for astronaut, you know, B is for botanist. And we read it and she loves it. And I've never like talked to her about it, you know, and made her wrong. But I had this thought one time when I was reading it, when we get to the M, it's for mechanic. And I was like, this would have been a perfect, I know, just
mechanic. Oh,
I posted this on Instagram and the amount of hate that I got, I mean, a lot of people agreed with me as well, but the amount of hate that I got, I was just like, oh God, our culture is so insane. But I was like, I'm not saying a woman can't be a mechanic. That's wonderful to be like, this is an option. But I'm like, why would you not say mother? Of all of the things from A to Z, this is like, I'm not saying that this author is wrong. Her whole idea is like, women are empowered. They can be all these things. These are all the careers that you can have. And I understand that. It was more like I was highlighting a problem, not that like this book is the problem. I was highlighting a larger cultural problem, because I remember distinctly when I was in middle school or high school, it was probably high school, we had like a career class, and it was all about preparing you for your career. And I remember sitting down and they're like, what would you like to be when you grow up? And I was like, oh my God, I don't know. There's like so many options. And they gave you a list, you know, like you could be all of these things. And then we could research them and be like, what would that be like? What would my day be like? What would the education be like? And it was this whole class about all the things you could be when you grew up. Literally nowhere on there was mother. Nowhere on there was like a caregiver. And I never thought about it at the time because I was so ingrained in the society that my value comes from production. My value comes from doing, going to school, getting an education, and doing some really big career, right? Making a lot of money. You know, we'd look up the salaries of all the things and be like, this is what I want to be. And I never thought about it until I was all the way through medical school.
No, motherhood is a career.
I know. Well, and it's not even about, like, I'm not advocating for stay-at-home moms either. It's not like I'm saying all moms need to be at stay-at-home moms, because I personally don't think I would be fully fulfilled in that role solely. And some women are, and that's amazing. I'm just like, why is it not a caveat of like, hey, these are all the things you can be. And if you have motherhood on your heart, if when you grow up, you want to have babies, maybe you should think about what that would look like in your life. Did you know that while 97% of women take a prenatal vitamin, over 95% are still deficient? That's why I love recommending Needed's Prenatal. Unlike most prenatals, Needed doses nutrients in the right forms and amounts that go above and beyond to really support both mama and baby. I actually worked with Needed for years. We spent over 3 years researching, working with practitioners, and really intentionally choosing every single nutrient form and dosage that's put into the prenatal. And now we have the data to back it up. In an IRB study, they found that the women who took the Needed prenatal had higher blood levels of key nutrients like vitamin B6, vitamin D, vitamin B12, riboflavin, vitamin K2, and selenium,
compared to women who are taking a regular prenatal. Even more powerful, only the needed group had significant amounts of vitamin D in their system, which is essential for supporting the immune system, bone development, blood sugar, blood pressure regulation, and so much more. This study reinforces what we've known for a long time, that real nourishment really makes a difference, and the proper nutrients support fertility, pregnancy, and baby's health. Needed isn't just aiming for adequacy, they're supporting what's possible. No matter where you are along your fertility or pregnancy journey, Needed is what I recommend. Head to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% on your first subscription order. Again, head to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. Okay, now back to the show.
Okay, but also it's because this, and what's funny is that I think a lot of, not to get political here, but for a second,
it's all connected.
It is all connected. Okay, so the people, this is like a glaring hypocrisy to me. The people who are probably attacking you on that reel are probably like highly pro-feminism.
Yes.
Like Democratic side of political leaning. And it's like, okay, isn't there like sort of an anti-capitalism aspect to that political party too? Mm-hmm. The reason why motherhood doesn't pop up on any of these career things is because they do not value what mothers do in the home as a career path. They right. do not value all of the hours that would be spent if we were to actually calculate how much money a woman is worth or is providing for her family by taking care of the kids, so that you don't have to outsource that, so that you actually get to make your home cooked meals and do it and don't have to outsource that. You don't have to outsource your house cleaning. You have to outsource all of that stuff. There's no value there. And it's like, it's such a twisted hypocrisy, because if they were to see that directly, they'd be like, oh, actually, hang on. That is mm-hmm. one of the most anti-capitalist things you can do, is to right. be like, nope, I'm not participating in this. I'm going to stay at home. And like, you guys who want us to be out there working so that it creates other career paths. Because think about all the other career paths that are created when a woman doesn't stay home with her kids.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that's the core reason. I don't think people are sitting at a board meeting and they're like, "Mwah, ha, 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 we're going to do, I don't think it happens like that.
You never know.
I guess you never know. But I do think though that that's why it's continued. It's perpetuated, and it's not even a list. It's not even an option on those, because they don't consider it a career. And
right.
by definition of bringing income into the family, it doesn't work in that career definition, but it still does though, in a way of like, yeah, but what are you not spending when
totally,
you
yeah.
are not participating in nannies and daycare and whatever, what, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's crazy.
100%. I mean, I have this conversation with my husband all the time, even though I am a doctor and I own a business, because of the time I've had to take off because my pregnancies were so hard and then I'm in postpartum, I'm still making things run and do things, but I'm not working at the capacity that I was before I had children. I often have the conversation with my husband that I'm like, does it even make sense for me to work? Because I feel like we're paying more for childcare than we are for the income that I'm bringing in. I work a lot, and because I'm an entrepreneur, a lot of the work I do, I don't get compensated for. You know, it's just the reality of it in my business more than most, because I'm also like always changing things and building things, and I could be doing it probably in a different way. I'm trying so hard to like honor all the parts of myself and honor my creative expression and what I want to bring into the world from a purpose perspective. And sometimes creative expression and purpose don't always equal revenue. But, you know, I have that conversation a lot where it's like, does this even make sense? Because we need the money right now, especially the situation that we're in with my husband's startup. Like, I am paying a lot of the bills, but as soon as that's not the situation, like, does this even make sense? And I'm always, you know, weighing those, because there is a cost to working outside of the home when you choose to have children. And the people who are anti having kids, they're like, well, it's your fault. You want to have kids, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, that's what I'm saying. It's like, this is also a part of my purpose and my calling. And maybe that's selfish for me to want to have kids, but I don't think so. And I feel like, you know, we're contributing to society. If everyone all of a sudden decided to not have children, it would all, you know, cease to exist.
That's a huge piece of this too, which is out of line and Hippocratic oath. What am I trying to say? Hypocritical of some of these ideologies is like, if we're going to be thinking about the community as a whole and the way that everything works together, then we need to be thinking about our future generations and who is going to be contributing to make everything work. And right mm-hmm. now, currently, with birth rates being the lowest that they've been globally, there's a huge, they call it the birth dearth, D-E-A-R-T-H. Mm-hmm. And it's like this big deficit where they don't actually know what is going to happen in the future. There's not going to be enough people in the workforce to make things run the way that they did during like the boomers, right? When there was a surplus, there was more of that generation than a typical generation, hence the name, right? But it's like, that is important. And so for people to be choosing like, I'm not going to have kids, global warming, it's the world's all screwed up, da 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 da. And it's like, okay, but who do you think is going to be actually the burden? You're putting the burden more on the fewer that are going to exist than helping out with the situation. Like, what are we, you know what I mean? It just, it does not actually make sense.
And then it gets into scary stuff where people are like, well, we don't actually need mothers. We can just grow babies in a lab and like have them on. And it's just like, oh my God, this is so scary. And it's just like, how do we stop this? Like the path that we're going down is not good. The fertility rates are so scary and women are so burned out. And so I feel like I'm bursting at the seams to try to get across all of the things that are in my head that I think about constantly. I think about this constantly. It must be a part of the work that I meant to share with the world, but it's very controversial and it like gets people all lit up and stuff. But it's just like, this is a problem in that women, like you said, I don't know what the exact answer is. I know what I would do, but women are told in our society to go do these things, get these careers, get all of this education, because the education system is broken too. The amount of women who go to college and get an undergraduate degree that literally means nothing, that does not actually result in any job or income, but they've wasted that amount of time, or they think, oh, well, I just need to go on and get a master's or get more education because that's going to do better for my family. It does in some situations, but not lately, and especially not with AI. And then, you know, I see it in my practice, and this is where I have a unique lens into women who come in their 30s, mid to late 30s even, and they're like, okay, I'm now ready. I've always wanted to be a mother. It's what I've always wanted, but I know I had to get a career and I do this thing. This is what society taught me. Whether it was something they consciously chose or not, they were just going along with the flow. And then now they're ready and it's like, cool. Now your body's infertile because you've been on birth control since you were 15 and you have had an unhealthy lifestyle because no one taught you in school. You spent hundreds of hours studying algebra and calculus and history and all of these worthless classes that never applied to you because you wanted to be an interior designer or whatever. And you don't know anything about health, about how to support your body, about any of this stuff. And so now, you know, you're coming to me at 35, 36, and we have to teach you all of this, undo all of the damage that's been done because it's not her fault. She doesn't know. Society does not teach us. It does not set us up. And the default of society is on health. The default of the medical system is not prevention or supporting health at all. It's all reactionary. And now she's running out of time because biologically we have a clock. And let's say she has a flare of, you know, any sort of lower egg count or any other hormonal issue that hasn't been looked into. And she's desperately now like scraping at the end of her reproductive life to try to have one, maybe two kids because the whole last 20 years of her life was devoted to a career and all she wanted was to be a mom.
Yeah. And it's she's broken. Sold this lie. She sold this lie, like, just suppress it. Suppress your fertility until you want it. Yes. And then, boom, you'll be able to get pregnant. And it's like, hopefully people are seeing that that is not the case. I do think that when we were younger, it felt like that was maybe. But now with, like, I don't know, the cumulative talk, you know, environmental changes and shifts, whatever's happened, I don't know. Or maybe it's just that we're the first major generation to go through being on birth control for, like, 15, 20 years. And we didn't really actually know what was going to happen at the end of that. Can the brain turn back on reproductive signaling?
It can. You know, birth control is not like it shuts off your fertility forever. It can turn back on. My biggest thing, because people will say that all the time, birth control does not cause infertility. No, it doesn't for the most part.
Well, but it can't. No, but you've seen the patients, though, who they have a very hard time getting their cycle back. There is something fundamentally that is changed and different in their system post many, many, many years. It's not that common, I will say, but it does. It can happen.
The biggest thing is that birth control covers up 15 years of dysfunction.
Yeah.
And that's the underlying root causes of that dysfunction, that when you pull the pill and you see what's actually going on in your body is so dysfunctional because of the last 15 years you didn't know because it was covering up all the symptoms that were telling you, hey, something's wrong. Your body's talking to you. It's telling you there's something wrong. And now you're waking up, trying to wake up your fertility in that sea of dysfunction, and you can't get pregnant in that sea of dysfunction. I mean, some women do, but it's a problem. And so there's just so many things that I would do different, you know, on that route, which we can talk about that, I guess, now, and then we can talk about pregnancy and that whole thing. But basically, like, imagine a world. This is my, like, future pacing, imagining, like, manifestation stuff. Imagine a world where women, when they're little, are, like, given all the options, right? These are all the things that you can do and be when you grow up, one of which is a mother. Mm-hmm. If you want to do what I'm doing, like, let's say this is your child. If you want to be a mom like me, you don't have to. You have the choice to not. And we'll talk about that and how to do it in a safe and healthy way for your body if that's what you choose. And you can, you know, whatever, we'll get there. So, like, you're talking to your daughter. These are all of the things you can be. You can be all of these things. My daughter every single day says, Mom, I want to be an astronaut today. I want to be an actor. I want to be, I'm like, great, you can be whatever you want to be. Like, I always tell her that. You can be whatever you want to be. And I sometimes will filter in because I know she's not getting it from the books and society. I'm like, you know, you can also be a mom if you want, you know, and you can do all of these things and be a mom. You can choose whatever your heart wants. And just laying that mentality into her. And then in school, it's like, hey, you're a female. And I know that this is so controversial because there's the whole, well, there are no longer genders and everyone's fluid. And it's like, I just, for the small majority, that's a group to be like, this is this small, I am a small minority over here. Help me understand that situation. But for other people, if you're a biological female who has an aspiration to be a mother one day, let's learn about your cycle. Like, really. Like, there should be a whole class in school every year about health. Not a one-time awkward, I am so crawling out of my skin because my teacher is talking to me about tampons in sixth grade and I'm going to kind of, like, traumatize it and block it out because it's so taboo in our society that I don't take in any of it. And that's it. And we've done our job. Like, most people get a health education class for, like, a weekend in school. And that's insane. It took me 4 or 5 times to really learn the menstrual cycle before I got it. And I didn't get it till I was in medical school. You know, it's complicated. It needs to be taught every year at these different levels of a woman to be like, this is what's going on with your reproduction. This is what's going on with health. This is how you eat well. This is how you support yourself. And if any of you want to be a mother, this is the kind of stuff that you should be doing now to protect yourself. Just like, hey, if you guys want to go to college, these are the things that you should be doing to prep for college. The amount of effort that is put into college prep work for a child from, like, some people from elementary school, they are prepping their kids for college. It gets intense in middle school and in high school. For some people, it's like their full-time job. They are grooming and prepping their child for college or for this whatever career, yet there is zero prep for motherhood. And I'm all about, okay, get that career, go to college or whatever, but why can't it be interwoven in as well to be like, okay, and if you want to get this career and go to college and you also want to be a mother, these are the steps that you should take.
Electrolytes are trending, yes, but they have been in need of our human bodies for all of time. And if you're drinking another popular and delicious salty electrolyte, here's why you should be drinking Relight instead. First of all, have you ever considered the salt source of these other brands? Because most of them just use table salt. Yeah, table salt. You don't want that. Redmond's Relight Powders uses their unrefined ancient sea salt that they mine in Utah. This salt source contains 60 plus trace minerals along with calcium, chloride, potassium, and magnesium in two different forms, glycinate and malate. The minerals that they use in the Relight Powders are all in the appropriate proportions and forms too. The metabolic needs of pregnancy, healing postpartum, and milk making require more minerals than in other times of your life. Pregnancy itself demands huge increases in your blood volume, which takes, you know, more minerals. Relight is the perfect blend to be sipping during your pregnancy or during your labor even, and especially while you're breastfeeding. It tastes amazing, and my favorite flavors oscillate between mixed berry, lemon lime, and the strawberry lemonade. But you can try a sample pack and try all the flavors for yourself and see what you think. Use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% on your entire Redmond order. That includes their OG sea salt, other seasonings, bentonite clays, toothpaste, and more.
Yeah, or like, here, think about this, because it's going to be like, somebody told me in college, I don't know, when it was right before I decided to do, so for those that don't know, I was going to be a veterinarian, Leah always was in human medicine. I decided not to do the vet thing, try to explore other animal avenues, like research to become a, and do like the research professor thing, blah, 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 whatever. Found out about naturopathic medicine and was hooked. But I went to a dermatologist maybe or something in college, and she was a PA, and mm-hmm. she worked 2 days a week, and she made like $150,000 a year or something. And I was like, wait, what? And she's like, yeah, well, I designed my career because I want to be a mom. Yeah. And so I was like, what can I do where I can work really part-time, two, mm-hmm. 3 days a week, something like that, and get paid really well to be able to support my family? And I was like, I've literally never heard anyone talk about that or purposefully design their career in that type of way. Mm-hmm. At that point in my life when I was like 19, you know what I mean? And then when we were in medical school, it was very much like part of our drive. We're like, okay, well, how are we going to do this so that we can have more mm-hmm. control? We want to be like the boss so we can have control, mm-hmm. so we can have kids. But that is a conversation that could have been one of these things you're talking about where it's woven in. It's like, okay, look, there are so many women who work full-time 40 hours a week and they have kids, and they, you can do that. That's totally a thing. And there's challenges with that too. So mm-hmm. there's pros and cons, there's challenges. If you wanted a little bit more balance, we can do it like this. Because like you said too, there is a lot of people who do not want to be full-time stay-at-home moms. Like they want to have their, whether it's a passion or a creative outlet or mm-hmm. because they actually do need to bring in some money, whatever it is. Which I will say too, I mean, our society is really messed up economically and most people do need to have a two-income household. But mm-hmm. I also know plenty of people thriving in 2025 on a very modest to like low income, on one solid income, and they just make mm-hmm. different choices. So it's possible. Yeah. It's not going to be as consumerism-y and as capitalism-y with like all of the fancy things and the brand new car and the like tons of travel and stuff. Like it's going to be a more modest life, but it's not sold to us that that's even an option, that you could do that, where you could live more modestly or frugally so that you can have this day-to-day life with maybe less of the stuff that's expensive. But I think that that's such a good idea to just prep kid, like girls who are trying to do this. But also when you were talking about, really quick, last thing I'll say is, and we'll put this in the show notes, there is a documentary series on Amazon Prime called Social Studies that's mm-hmm. about social media use in high school and college kids that is like 5 episodes long. It's so good. I think I rented it or I bought it, or I don't know. It wasn't very much money, but it was so eye-opening and amazing. And a huge piece of it is the prep for college. And then the amount of time that these high school kids are spending, the amount of worth that they put on their college admittance. And then like, what happens if they don't get it? And what they have like literally no plan for their life. That's their whole pinnacle of their life has been get into college and this is what you're going to do. And there's been nothing else outside of that. And, but also it's like, talking about how social media impacts kids. It's more about that, but there's just this theme about college that you said that. And it's like, yeah, that, and it's not the same as it was anymore. One thing about our systems in society is that because of technology, it's the hyperbolic curve of change is mm-hmm. our old systems are not keeping up. They are outdated. They don't make sense. Actually, this year, one of our nannies that we have who sometimes comes over said that only 1/3 of her high school graduating class is going to college.
Whoa.
1/3. Like things are different. It is changing. Mm-hmm. We need to be able to like expand our mind. Even what our kids are learning right now, this is partially why we choose homeschool, because it's like, I don't really know. I feel like a lot of this stuff is going to be outdated, especially in the face of AI. It's very scary. I'm not like a fan mm-hmm. of how this is going to go. And I have no idea how to prepare my kids for what's happening in the future. So it's like, okay, we're just going to focus on being like really good people and good communicators and like friends and, yeah. you know, explore your passions, but yeah. know that there's not probably going to be the jobs that you're thinking of in the way that we have been exposed to them. For a while, it was that way. And it, all the systems kind of worked. And it was like, you prep to go to college, you go to college, you get da 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 da. It is just so different. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, like there, that needs to be taken into account with all of this too.
Well, and maybe that's a sign for the positive. I mean, there's a lot of things that technology and social media and all of that I think is not for the positive and really ruining things. But I feel like the piece that I'm talking about is maybe more affecting millennial women, right? The women who are right now trying yes. to get pregnant. And maybe that will be very different in 15 years. Maybe because of social media, women will understand their bodies more and they'll understand all of these things. And maybe the pressure from people will change the medical system, you know? I mean, that's kind of my hope, but I just feel like millennial women are kind of the ones that have been screwed. And yes, every group are the product of what came before. And so I guess the millennial women's situation and even the generation that's right behind millennials, I don't know what that is, like whatever, like my sister or whatever, she's just a few years younger than me. That generation is what I'm talking about, because we were the product of the mothers who grew up in the 70s, you know, feministic movement, and the, our children or even the people who are graduating now, you know, are going to be the product of something different. And so their whole experience will be different. But when it comes to fertility in particular, yes, it starts with the career and from the internal even knowingness of a person in their preparation. And I think that's the biggest thing that I want to highlight is how much effort that we put toward school and preparing for colleges or, you know, putting pressure on all of these things or even sports. I feel like society values literally everything else except for health and conscious communication and, you know, conscious relationships and communication or like becoming a good partner, becoming a good person, communicating well, how to teach your children without traumatizing them. Like all the things that in my opinion actually matter are not anywhere in our culture or education or our medical system. And I think that's like the biggest thing that I want to highlight, because if they were, if we put even 10% of the amount of effort and value that we put on sports, you know, sports in school, sports in a professional sense, even, you know, art and music get more attention than health, which art and music are important. And I'm not saying that sports aren't important and exercise isn't important, but the intensity and the obsessiveness of our culture and all of the groomingness of that in our schools and our colleges and our society, you would think there would be at least a small amount put toward this, where every woman, my dream in the future is that every woman goes through high school. Let's say she's at her high school graduation. She knows all the things that she can be when she grows up, including motherhood. She knows about her cycle. She knows how to prevent fertility in a healthy way. And if she chooses hormonal birth control, she's doing it intentionally and very much on purpose, and not because she's just covering up unhealthy symptoms or just taking it blindly, assuming that like one day it's just going to be fine. She knows about health. She knows how to eat well and how to support herself, and that the careers and the paths that she's choosing, she has that intention. I was just like you. I always wanted to be a mom. And so I went into medicine so that I could have my own business and make enough money working part-time to be a mom. I didn't plan on having infertility. So my whole plan was that like, oh, as soon as I'm 27, I'm going to graduate medical school and become pregnant right away before I even start my practice. Like I knew that that was a necessary evil, that I had to go to school for 8 years and it was going to take a big part of my life, but it was going to give me the flexibility, you know, to be able to only work part-time and make enough money to make it worth it and blah, blah, all this stuff. I didn't anticipate having a decade of like fertility struggles, right? But that's what I'm saying. A lot of women don't plan on that. And, you know, it's just so sad. I just have seen so much heartbreak of women who are in this desperation once they are ready to start trying for kids, and they don't even necessarily see it. But because we're trained to be so holistic and root cause, I can just see that a lot of the imbalance and a lot of the sadness that is coming from this situation, it wasn't her fault. It was such a product of the society that she was born into and that is all of around her. And that is so sad, you know, it just needs to change. And from the medical perspective side, I mean, I know there's pros and cons to systematized government taking over healthcare. I'm not a fan in general. I do think it doesn't work well in larger societies, you know, in Sweden and in England, even in certain areas. Sure, you know, the government paying for healthcare can be helpful, but we've just heard so many horror stories about. It's just like, imagine needing a surgery and you have to go to the DMV and have that experience for needing a surgery. It's not ideal. You know, you can't get in, you can't do all this stuff. And so having private healthcare can be very beneficial in certain ways. But in the fertility sector, let's say, there's zero upfront testing. There's zero prevention. There's zero support with health or any of the things that could make a huge difference in a person's life. And you start trying and it's 6 to 12 months before they'll even investigate you. And at that point, they're like, you should probably just do IUI, IVF, whatever. And you're pushed into this very expensive, very invasive procedure that's not even guaranteed anyways. And they don't care because they're not paying for it. because you're paying for it, because it's a private thing that you have to pay out of pocket for. If you are lucky enough to have a really fancy insurance that you're paying for anyways that covers IVF, or maybe you have a really nice employer who pays for it, they're paying for it. But if we look at it from a lump sum, this is like political things are made based on looking at the overarching cost. The cost that it would save if we put it all together. I understand the government wouldn't do this because they're not the ones paying for IVF. But let's say they were. If all of a sudden the government had to pay for all of the fertility stuff that's going on, the amount of money they would save by just doing a semen analysis and a comprehensive blood panel, a semen analysis on the man and a comprehensive blood panel on a female, if every person would just get that once in their whole life, one time, the amount of money that they would save from preventing all of the crazy amount of intervention that takes place in the fertility, it would be astronomical. Like astronomical. Every man who graduates high school should have a semen analysis done.
Although, do you think it's beneficial at that age though? Like, because it could change so much based on their lifestyle factors by the time they want to have kids maybe 10 years later.
Yeah, I guess it could.
I feel like they need to do it when they're wanting to try. Or like, yes, you know, when you're getting close to that time, that's when you need to do these tests.
Yes, totally. You're probably right. Yeah. Like high school's too young. Women need to know about their cycle that time though, because the reality is women have to prevent pregnancy or not.
Yeah.
You know, like they have to know about it. So I guess a man doesn't matter as much. I guess I'm coming from a biased perspective that if my husband had done a semen analysis when he graduated high school, it would have saved us a lot of money. So I'm definitely speaking from a biased perspective because his would have been obvious by then. But just that like it's crazy that we don't know these things. So anyways, like it's broken in our medical system too, of just how we approach things and how, yeah, a couple should come. The other thing that irks me is how much time, money, and effort is put into preparing for weddings.
Oh my God. I use this analogy all the time in relation to like birth and postpartum, because it's kind of like the nursery thing. People will put so much time and effort and money into their wedding and their nursery, and then they will not spend $250 on an IBCLC to get help with their breastfeeding problems. And then they just go, oh, I really, really wanted to. And it just didn't work. And I'm like, oh, did you get any help? No, it was too expensive. It was $250. I'm like, okay, I know you for a fact. You just had a $75,000 wedding last year. Like, what? Yeah. You couldn't spend $250 on somebody to help you with this major thing that was a goal of yours that has huge health implications for your baby and you down the line. I know there's mm-hmm. women who don't want to breastfeed, and like, sorry, that's not the biologically best choice. If you can't do it, that's different, but mm-hmm. nobody is going to try to like sugarcoat it for you that you choosing not to do that is like best in this situation. You know what I mean? And, but the lack of wanting to spend money on, I know you're talking about fertility things and it's so true too, but the lack of wanting to spend money on like a doula or a class, a birth class or a whatever. And it's just like, wait a minute, hang on. You just got the brand new iPhone 17 Pro Max that was $1,200. like the just, it doesn't make any sense. The priorities are so messed up. And again, it has to do with like consumerism, capitalism. It's like, yes, these are the ideas that most of these people are actually fighting against.
Yes, 100%. It's like when you go in the grocery store, I literally have to teach my patients how to survive like you would having to teach someone back in the day when we lived off the land to be, this is a poisonous mushroom. This is a poisonous berry. These are the things you can eat. These are the things you can't eat. You literally have to learn that at a grocery store.
Yeah.
This is what's safe. This is not what's safe. Even though it's blasting at you on the end aisle in the fanciest, prettiest colors, on the TV, on the commercials. Those are the poisonous berries, you know? And if people, if you don't learn that, it would be like being let out into a wild forest back in the day and being like, wow, those red berries look so good. No one told me they would kill me. It's like, you guys, as society, we have to teach our people, like, this is how it works. And everyone assumes that the system is set up for them. And it is not. It is absolutely not set up for them. The medical system is not, the food care system is not, food health system, like it's not set up for you. You have to learn how to navigate it. And obviously the ideal situation would be that that whole system changes, but that's money and capitalism, like you mentioned, it's not going to change as easily. So but we're not even teaching them. We're just like, oh, I hope that they figure it out. I hope that like that random woman who we never taught about the poisonous berries or the mushrooms will just figure out how to have birth alone over there with no help. And she's expected to go back to gathering her baskets of berries that she doesn't know are even unhealthy for her as soon as she has a baby. Like, that's how our society is going to function. That's literally what's happening.
You guys, I saw a friend
posted in her stories the other day that she was at the grocery store and took a picture of like a Captain Crunch type style breakfast cereal that had little berries, speaking of berries, that glow in the dark.
No.
It was part of the marketing of it. It was like, oh my God, you can eat this. That glows in the dark. I'm like, how stupid are we? Are you kidding? Oh, how did that get passed? I have a confession to make that will probably knock the socks off of some of you crunchy moms. And please don't make fun of me for this, but listen, I don't make bone broth, okay? I don't. Sue me. I like to buy it instead. And maybe one day I'll get my act together, but for now I rely on brands like Fond to make real, actual bone broth from scratch, just the way that I would at home. Fond uses actual bones, not just rehydrated powders like a lot of brands. And their animals are verified regenerative, 100% grass-fed or pasture-raised, and the vegetables that they use are organic. And as you've heard us talk about in the past, there are certain foods, like bone broth, that have been used in pregnant and postpartum populations throughout human history, preferentially more so in those populations, due to their healing benefits on the body. So providing the connective tissue nutrition or optimal gut health and healing so that our bodies can make new life healthfully. Fond has several different flavors to choose from in beef and chicken broth, from unflavored to things like the classic garlic and lemon to even a turmeric and black pepper with added health benefits. But then they also have foundational fats like tallow and lard as well. Make your family building season easy and choose Fond for your shelf-stable glass bottled bone broth that you can use in soups, with rice, or just for sipping like I do because they taste that good. Check the link in the show notes or go to fondregenerative.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER for 10% off and nourish yourself with Fond.
Oh, I know. I'm so fascinated with history. If you learn about the history of the cereal companies, and it's, you know, they literally don't care about you. It's all about making money. And it's just, anyways, like I digress with all of that. But basically, you know, we are just not teaching women. It's society's fault is what I was like coming down to. And what society tells us and programs us, we're all being programmed all the time, right? I know we sound like conspiracy theories, but it's not. We are being programmed. That's why they call TV things programs. I mean, our grandparents probably knew them that way. They used to say, what programs on TV? They're literally programming you to have that value. Just like you said, we value. I mean, I just got to save the date in the mail for a wedding with a friend we both have. And it's like, yeah, okay, months in advance, they're like, this is so important. You all save the date before I even tell you it's happening. Put it on your calendar. And then it's like, we talk to the florist and we spend money on this and the food and blah, blah, blah. And all to have this grand party. And I'm not saying weddings aren't important. I love weddings. I loved my wedding. I spent so much time. You were there. We lived together when I was planning my wedding.
But you made a lot of stuff, though, handmade for your wedding to save money. That was amazing.
I did. But we value that so much. Or like you said, the nursery. And there's, you know, people say the same thing. Well, I can't do a semen analysis. It's too much money. It's $150. I'm like, you literally spent that at dinner last night when you got a steak and two drinks. So do not tell me that you do not have the money. Like, that is ridiculous. It's all about priorities. And we as society have to value this. I mean, imagine if people actually knew, like, paint the picture of this like utopian society where money was not the ruler. And it was actually what was for the best for the planet and for people. I mean, I know that's what everyone wants. It's utopian. I get that. But just imagine it, that we teach children how to be good people and how to communicate with each other and how to have conscious communication and how to, you know, handle our feelings and do them in such a beautiful way. And we teach about health and how to eat and live off the land and gather food in a way that doesn't hurt the earth and not make a bunch of poisonous toxins that are killing everything, including us and our fertility. And, you know, we do investigation ahead of time to be like, am I fertile? If I'm having period issues or painful symptoms or all of these things, we investigate what's actually going on and get to the root cause of it. I mean, there wouldn't be fertility issues. And I know that sounds utopian, but it doesn't even have to be that utopian. Like, we can do that. That's not that hard.
I think, though, that what the problem is that it's like I was saying earlier, it's changed so dramatically. And people used to just get pregnant. So it was not something that they've had to think about so hard until really recently. And it's getting problematic so quickly that everybody's like, they're not caught up to the idea. I mean, there are people who are like privy to all of this stuff and who are doing all these things. But on the general mass like scale, it's the tipping point has not been reached yet where it's on everybody's radar. And I know, like, obviously for you and me, we think about these things a lot and then it's all you see in your integrative IVF and fertility clinic, right?
So it's like people just have not come around to think that they're going to have issues. No one wants to think that that's going to be them. And so I think there's an aspect there where in coming years, I think you're just ahead of the curve, like with your wishes and wants, yeah. which is beautiful and it should be. And it's also just the philosophy of natural medicine is to be preventative, yeah. preventative health measures, looking at things like, you know, we know that there's a lot of chronic illness that can be prevented. I mean, almost all of it can be prevented if mm-hmm. it's for diet and lifestyle factors and different, you know, environmental things, epigenetics, whatever. But I think so many people are just banking on the fact that having a baby is a natural, normal part of life and that they're not going to have an issue. And it's a big surprise. It's very sad when it's not happening or they're having miscarriages. And then, oh my gosh, I mean.
Yeah. It's not even about just fertility. Like, I know you're really passionate about this in the birth and pregnancy and birth space, but even postpartum, you know, we can come back to pregnancy and birth, but postpartum also, I feel this is another place where I get really upset because birth, pregnancy and birth are so important. I mean, that's so important to you. And in the blip of time, it's not that crazy long. But then postpartum, the same thing is set up on this intersection of now I have these children, child or children to take care of. Yet I have this dysfunctional society that is not set up to help me and or I don't have a career or a work situation that I can do it. And so the level of burnout that I see in women before they get pregnant and after they have their children is so insane. And even if you have a great supportive partner who's playing a big role, it's still insane. And like that, like me and you, I can't even imagine what the women are going through who do all the cooking, all the cleaning, all the grocery shopping, also work, also take care of the kids. I mean, my husband does 50% of that, sometimes more. And I'm still like, this is hard. And, you know, I see these videos or I work with patients who are like desperately like sobbing because they don't want to go back to work at 6 weeks because, you know, they want to be with their baby and there's this like biological call. And then you read all of the stuff about, I can't remember that one woman who just talks about attachment theory a lot. And she's kind of, she's not fear-based, but she's really intense. It definitely makes you feel bad all the time about everything. But she has a lot of good points. Just like dropping your kids off at daycare and how damaging that is to them and all of these things. And not to say that you can't do it, but it's just like, this is crazy. You know, that like women are just not set up. Like our society is not set up for women to become mothers.
Yet. Yeah, there's all no child-centric aspect of it at all. And it's dumb and it's the snake eating its own tail because the kids are the future community.
Yeah. And then they have all this trauma and imbalance and they have to see people like my sister. And it's just like, this could have all been prevented if we just, if society and the systems were just set up slightly differently and our values were just different. And, you know, I know this is a wishful thing that's probably never going to happen, but just even our own intentional like knowledge of it inside of our own family units of just bringing it into our communities, I feel like from a grassroots movement could change a lot. And I don't know. Just having these conversations and being more conscious and aware, it just blows my mind how little society is set up for this and how the biggest thing is that women are sort of just expected to become mothers on the side. Like that's how it feels in my mind. Like,
yeah, like a side hustle.
Big, yeah. Here's your big entree of like your career and all these things. And then, oh, you want to be a mom? That's like a side thing. Like we don't really talk about it. Like we don't know anything about it. You go to your career. Oh, you have a kid? Like I didn't know. It's like, oh yeah, that's taking up 90% of my effort and energy. And it's a side thing. And it's like, that's not good. Like that shouldn't be the case. That shouldn't be what is done either because you have to from a financial perspective or whatever. I don't know. I just feel like there should be a different approach.
I mean, I feel you. I think that it's important to understand the context of why what's happening right now is happening. And that's sort of like the point of this episode is to, in case people haven't thought about it before, there's a lot of systems at play that make it tough because motherhood is, you know, the best thing, but I hardly know anybody who's ever said motherhood is easy, right. But they all still do it, love it, like sacrifice anything for it. And it's just still a wild ride. And we have to remember, this is not the way that it has been through millennia. And we are so pulled in a million, gajillion different directions, even with just like text messages on your phone and feeling like you need to respond to people. But then of course there's social media. And of course, then there's, do you have a job or how are you going to work and survive in this economic environment? on one income, or maybe you don't have a partner and you're like doing it, you know, single moms. My God, I literally like bow down, kiss the ground you walk on, like different breed of human. Okay.
100%.
And, or single dads. I mean, there are some single dads too, but heavily it's usually single moms. And there's a lot of different challenges that are out there as a variety of things that can be faced. And I think overall, there is this air and feel that motherhood is not valued. It's not, motherhood doesn't make anybody money. You know, I mean, I guess it does. There is some certain, you know, formula and cribs and different revenue streams, but choosing that as your life is, it's just rarer and rarer. Although maybe it's just our friend group, but it feels like the pendulum is swinging back where people are like, I want to spend as much time with my kids as I can. Maybe if it's either, if it's just like before they go to school, like in those first 5 years, so they're not, you know, working in that time or very little, or they're not even sending their kids to school. And then they're doing, you know, their home education or some kind of an abridged thing. I feel like after COVID, everything has shifted and changed in a lot of ways for so many different people to, which is good. It's a good after effect of COVID to say, it's just these systems don't, like so many of the systems do not serve anymore. They're like really outdated and archaic. Insurance models, public education needs a huge overhaul. Like there's a lot of things that are not keeping up, and the internet and social media has a huge, huge, huge impact on that. And it's like the wild, wild west. Nobody knows. Nobody knows how it's going to, and now AI, are you kidding me? Like, I feel like there was not even AI at all. Nothing AI like 3 years ago. And it's completely, can you imagine in 3 more years what it's going to be like? I mean, there's no going back. There's no, you either integrate it or you don't, but there is no, there's life pre-AI and post-AI. It will never go away.
Yeah. I mean, and maybe this becomes like
crazier.
And this is the devil's advocate. Again, I also am not a fan of AI at all. I do think it's going to cause a lot of issues. I know when you talk to certain people, they're like, well, it will just create different jobs just like the internet did. You know, like you could have said the same thing about the internet. But I do think overall it probably might be a net negative. However, if I could play devil's advocate, maybe there's a situation where, let's say like me, let's just use me as an example. Because of AI lately, I have been able to get way more work done in a way shorter amount of time. And that makes me have more time to spend with my kids.
Yeah.
So maybe there will be situations where women will have work options where they're, instead of, you know, being hired to, I don't even know. I mean, copywriting is so sad. I feel so bad for copywriters and anyone who's a writer at all. It's just, it's so sad. I do think that the rise of AI is so sad. But, you know, let's say you were hired to get a certain outcome done for a company. If you are known to utilize AI with that, and you're basically like the guider of it, like you're the shepherd of it, then you might be able to get paid the same amount to produce something in a quarter of the time and then get that time back to be with your children versus having to leave like the factory model of work back in the day, which is what our, you know, conventional medical or school system is based off of. Was that you literally had to leave to work at a factory from 9 to 5 because you had to physically be there at the factory making the things. Mm-hmm. And that's time away from your children. And so you had to have them go somewhere. And so that's why the school system was set up and all of that. And so maybe there's a way that we can, just like I say this about everything, alcohol inherently isn't bad. It's why you're using it and how you're using it. Sugar isn't necessarily inherently bad. I mean, it has pieces where they aren't really good for your health, but it's about how you're using it. Same with birth control. Same with any pharmaceutical. It's like they're tools. They can be very bad. They can also be used for good in the right situation and strategically. And maybe there's a way that we can use AI in the same way. There will be bad people who get AI and do bad things, just like there are bad people who get guns and do bad things. It's like guns are neutral. The bad people are the bad people. You know, same thing with AI. But we could also maybe use these tools to our benefit. So I don't know. It's just a thought that came to me that it might not all be doom and gloom. It might be look very different, but maybe this is a way that women can provide for their family, maybe work from home more and be able to be with their children while still bringing in an income. I don't know. Something.
No, it's true. It's true. With anything, there's going to be a duality, good and bad, any new change of any kind. Right. And I mean, that's, I think, one of the main themes of this podcast is that we like to highlight both sides, because often in society, there's only one side of it that's ever pushed and ever talked about. And it's like, well, hang on, we also need to talk about the the cons of this choice, you know, or how this even like as it relates to, say, birth control, as we've spoken about, which has major pros. Like there are situations where there are major pros to being on birth control or using some form of it, right? Like hormones is, you know, obviously like a condom. There's not that many cons to condoms unless they break. And so you just need to know that that can be a thing. But there's also cons to natural family planning. Like there are lots of accidental pregnancies that happen there because you won't know when you actually ovulated until after you've ovulated because of the way that the temperature spike is clear. And sometimes people have a random cycle where they ovulated way earlier or way later, or they got sick or something happened. And even if you've been a 13, 14 dayer for 20 years of your life, something can change. And so, you know, there are negatives of all of that. There are negatives of natural birth. There's negatives of cesareans, there's negatives of everything. And then there's also the pros. So I'm glad that you highlighted the pros of AI, because I do think you're right. There's going to be a certain level of benefit. It's just going to take our society a lot of time to, I think, to settle with it. Because my mind is so visual, the way that I just saw it is like that movie with the dinosaurs and like Ducky, what's it called?
Land Before Time.
Yes, Land Before Time.
Really?
Oh, yeah, Land Before Time in the like earthquake scene and like the tectonic plates coming together and like, you know, and then like the big long neck mama dies. It's like super sad. But it's like, I see AI being a big disruptor in society, like a spike coming up out of the ground, like a huge mountain, like a gigantic, you know, like tectonic plates meeting, banging, boom. And then there's all this debris that's settling and huge boulders and rocks are like falling off the sides of it. And that's where we're at right now, where there's like all of this settling that has to happen before everything clears and you can like see the mountain for what it is, which is like, how is this actually going to play its role? But right now we're just like still in this phase of being like, what is happening? There's good stuff. There's bad stuff. There's whole industries that have been created. There's whole industries that have been crushed. There's people losing their jobs. There's people making more money than ever. There's people being ultimately hugely confused. I mean, the poor boomers, like I feel bad, so bad for them. But even like I've been fooled by AI videos a couple of times and it's like, that little section, how is that going to play out in the future when people are making videos of political events or worldwide events that people fully believe are real and true and they are not, and we will never know. And then policies will be made, wars will be started, things will be done, and we will not know. And it's like, guys, that's a crazy world to imagine. I mean, we'll get there, I guess, when we get there, but it is wild.
Or on the flip side, just to like as a closing note, I know this didn't mean to be about AI, but it's like, I agree with you completely. I think even probably if we were going to say it, it would probably be in that negative, at least for a while. It's the great disruptor. It's like Trump, you know, whether you like or hate Trump, he's the great disruptor. His whole intention from a spiritual perspective, what people say, is to literally disrupt everything and to make it all crumble because it needs to. Whether you like that or not.
Yeah, it's just, not good. Like, in a net negative way overall, I think.
Yeah, totally. But that's what you're talking about too, is chaos, right? Like this whole tectonic plates coming with AI, it's like absolute chaos. And then it's like, what is built after the destruction? And that sucks to live through it. It sucks to live through the like destruction and the chaos. But, you know, let's say maybe on the other side of it, just like you said, people can make videos about anything, or maybe our society gets smart enough where they realize literally nothing can be trusted online. So we stop looking at the news. We stop watching news. We start paying attention to like our local government more and our local stuff, because it's all just smoke and mirrors anyways. And people know that. And maybe because of AI and these new things that are built, people have more access to their health and it's not gatekeeped by, you know, certain doctors. And so we can do testing earlier and we don't have to wait for them to give us permission because we've been trying for a year. Or, you know, maybe, I don't know. I'm just like,
Everything crumbles.
Yeah, everything crumbles because the systems are broken. That's very clear. We've been talking about that. All of these systems in place are broken. Maybe there does need to be some radical destruction to
break
them
all down.
Well, you know,
Gary Vee is like a big, I don't know, business dude. I actually don't even know what his role is, but he just has like a huge social media presence.
Oh, I think I know him, yeah.
Yeah, he's always predicting trends. He has a really funny voice. He's awesome to listen to. I love him. He's very like animated. And he's always talking about how, because of the rules of social media and the internet and whatever, people are craving in-person contact, in-person events. They're not wanting to do these like virtual things anymore and whatever, whatever. And so you're right, it is going to pendulum swing back. And it reminds me of the movie The Time Machine. Have you seen that?
So.
Okay, like I'm not spoiling it for you. It's actually so good. You guys should all watch it. It's in the very beginning of the movie that it's set back in way back in the day when there's like horse and buggy and stuff. So I don't know whatever time period that was. History is not my favorite thing in the whole world. To be
When the
honest, I paid
dinosaurs were
attention to
here and
science.
there were horses and buggies and
Yeah, I paid attention to science and like flowers and things and not that. And this man's wife dies, basically, is what happens like in the very beginning of the movie. And he was already working on this time machine, but he's like highly motivated. So he goes back in time and he tries to prevent her death. And basically, she just like keeps dying in different ways. And then he's just devastated. He accidentally like falls asleep on the lever or something, and it
Oh my
shoots
God,
him
don't tell
like.
me all the things.
Well, okay, but I mean, this is all happening at the very beginning. But it, like, so the whole travel, he goes like way far into the future, but he goes a couple of steps, and so you get to see kind of like where society is a few steps. It's so good. It's a very old movie now at this point. I think I saw it in like high school.
Oh, cool.
But he goes so far into the future that the people are living like Native Americans again. And I'm like, oh my God, see?
Yeah,
You
you
know,
never know.
that's where we would be happiest. I mean, in these huge societies, like you mentioned earlier about European countries and it working really well with their healthcare systems, it does work better in smaller
Yes,
chunks of
smaller.
people. When there's only 9 million people in a country, it's a really different thing than when there's 400,000, 400 million people in a country. Like, it's just very, very difficult to large scale some of these concepts and have it work well for people. And so, but I mean, I'm not saying that our current one works well either. We need to have something different. It's funny how we have not been able to like invent a new way. We're just like,
I mean,
no.
we have every, I mean, we have free energy. They just shut it down, you know?
Yeah, but
We know how to do everything. It's just the powers that be won't let us. Humans are smart enough. We know what to do. It's just, you know,
the money
there's
and
just
corruption.
the
Although
power of the few.
I do appreciate though the way that the internet is making it harder and harder for the corruption to continue because it's getting exposed.
Yes. That is great. See, there's pros and cons.
There is pros and cons, so
Pros
that's a
and
good
cons.
thing.
Yeah,
Anyway.
we're gonna sit here and try to see the silver lining, and hopefully, you know, the pursuit of motherhood becomes easier as time goes on. And, you know, we'll be here to support all of those who are currently in this cluster of what's currently happening. And, you know, we'll get through it. I have hope. But yeah, thanks for hearing us rant about this topic.
Yeah, hopefully it made sense to you guys, and we will hear, or you'll hear from us next week.
If your heart aches for a baby, whether you want a baby someday or you've already been on the journey and it hasn't been as easy as you had hoped, I want you to know that you don't have to do it alone. I created Womanhood Wellness for women just like you. Inside of this amazing membership, you have step-by-step doctor-designed blueprints unique to your womanhood type based on the season that you're in. You have access to order your own labs. You have over 22 amazing courses and growing that I have created for you, all about breaking up with birth control, balancing your hormones, preparing your body for pregnancy, optimizing your fertility, and navigating the root causes of infertility. I have support for pregnancy loss, for navigating integrative IVF, for supporting your partner throughout this process, as well as information about libido, which is one of my favorite things to teach about, because when it comes to womanhood, it's all connected. On top of the amazing content and resources, such as being able to order your own supplements and the protocols that I have, all of the step-by-step checklists of exactly what to do within each lesson in a basic, intermediate, and advanced path, I also have amazing support inside of the membership. Every month, you get a live Q&A with me. I have monthly master classes taught by me and other amazing practitioners. And bi-weekly, we have connection calls where you get to really connect with women and share and feel seen. We have seasonal circles that are unique to the different seasons of womanhood. For example, if you are breaking up with birth control, or you're struggling with libido, or you are trying to conceive, maybe you're going through IVF, or you've had a pregnancy loss, all of these different scenarios require different support. And so these circles put you together with women just like you so that you can really connect and make long-lasting friendships. You'll finally understand your cycle, your labs, your body, your fertility, and you'll feel empowered in your womanhood journey. So if this sounds exciting to you, I encourage you to go to womanhoodwellness.com and use code podcast to sign up and save 20% on your first month. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and share with a friend who would benefit from this content. Please remember that the views and ideas from this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis and treatment of any disease. Consult with your provider before integrating any of this information into your own healthcare plan. A healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.